Chapter 13. Nim sang as she did her chores. She didn't know how Alex would beat the bad guys, but she knew she would. She did her charts and cleaned the hut, dusted, shook and swept, got new palm fronds to make Alex's bed, arranged seashells around the coconut pearl and her mother's picture. She weeded and watered the vegetable garden, ate two bananas and some peas for lunch, and dug up three sweet potatoes and picked a lettuce, an avocado, a tomato, and three handfuls of strawberries for later. Then she flopped into the pool for a rest and a bath, and she fed Fred, and she and Fred watched the birds overhead. They were flying inland as if it were night. Something was wrong. Back at the beach, the sea lions were honking and restless, and Fred's friends were zipping over the rocks, even the oldest scuttling like hatchlings. Selgi was by the hut, barking anxiously for Nim. Two more gulls flew past, and then a frigate bird. Galileo, Nim called, running to the hut for a Tropo tourist cap. Have you got something for me? The big bird swooped, grabbed the stuffed fish, and let Nim pull a note from his band. Dear Nim, the birds say there's a storm coming. Go to the emergency cave. Take the phone, laptop, solar panel, battery charger, and other scientific equipment and whatever else you have time for. But you are the only thing that matters. As soon as you see that storm coming, drop everything and get to safety. If I can bear the storm, I'll be home tonight or early tomorrow. Sorry, if I can beat the storm, I'll be home tonight or early tomorrow. Love, as much as Jack loves a Nim, Jack. Nim stared at the sky. It was clear and blue, but the air was so still and heavy on her skin that she knew the birds were telling the truth. And she knew she had to do what Jack said. Nim didn't like the emergency cave, but it was better than storms. And it was much better than being on a boat in a storm. And much, much better than being on a boat in a storm when you don't know the storm is coming. I've got to warn Alex, said Nim, and dialed the number. Alex answered on the second ring. I've learned to sail, and I'm on my way. I've just cast off from the Tropo tourist ship. Get back on it, Nim begged. But a roar of engines drowned Alex's answer, and when the noise faded into the distance, Alex was saying, I can see a dot where your island is. I should get there quickly. The captain told me there'd be some wind soon. It's not a wind, Nim shouted. It's a storm. And then the satellite dish on the Tropo tourist ship was too far away, and Alex's phone was dead. Nim dropped her phone into the wagon. She tucked the coconut pearl into her pocket and pulled down the satellite dish and solar panel. She loaded the picture of her mother and the flashlight, battery charger, laptop, and satellite dish into her wagon and tied the solar panel on top. Fred climbed on top of that and nearly tipped it all over. Walking's good for you, Nim told him, lifting him down before he tipped it back the other way. Meet us at the emergency cave, she called to Selkie. Chica would be safer on the sandy bottom of the Turtle Beach, but sea lions can't stay underwater forever. Besides, if she couldn't have Jack, Nim wanted Selkie in a storm. After the hissing stones, she had to leave the wagon and carry everything over the black boulder to the cave. The laptop was heavy, and she was afraid of dropping it. The solar panel dragged and caught its corners in the cracks on the rocks. But in four trips, the whole load was safe in the cave. Now stay there, she shouted. She ordered Fred. Selkie had stopped to fish, but Nim blew the shell whistle twice to tell her where they were. The sea was flat and calm. There wasn't a breath of wind. I bet I'm moving all this stuff for nothing, Nim said crossly as she tugged the wagon back to the hut for the books and Jack's files of notes. They were heavy, and it took six trips to get them from the stones to the caves. One more load, she thought. This time, she grabbed her sleeping mat, water bottles, toothbrush, comb, clothes, and barometer, throwing them into the wagon any old way because now she could see in the distance a whirl of dark air, black and yellow as bruise, moving across the eastern sky. It was coming fast, faster than Fred after coconut. Nim dropped the wagon handle and flew across the grassland. The wind hit just as she reached the black rocks. It knocked her backwards and whipped her hair, It tore her at her eyes and ripped the breath out of her lungs. Selkie grunted encouragement. Fred skittered and Nim scrambled the rest of the way on her hands and knees. As she reached the mouth of the cave, the first lightning flashed, the first thunder boomed, and the rain came down like a surf wave on the rocks. Alex pulled her sails tight, the way the instructor had shown her. The Tropo tourist ship disappeared. She was alone on a wide, empty ocean in a boat as small and frail as a bathtub. "I wish Nim was right and I was my hero," she thought. "But at least I can take notes about sailing. The gentle breeze, the interesting clouds." The interesting clouds came closer, fast. They were dark gray and swirling. The gentle breeze jumped to a full force gale, and Alex felt like the hero in a legend who let the winds escape from the bag they were trapped in. That was when she remembered that she left her life jacket on the ship. "I'll tie myself to the mast," she said, but before she could reach it, the rain started. "Like being in a car wash," Alex thought, "without a car." The mast suddenly seemed a long way away, but just beside her was a metal ring with rope through it. Alex yanked the rope free and tied one end to the ring and the other around her waist. Then there was nothing to do except try to steer and wonder whether the rope she'd pulled off was important, and if it mattered anyway when the boat was balancing on a skyscraper of high waves. But they weren't quite as tall as skyscrapers. Maybe they weren't much higher than a cottage. Tall enough, thought Alex, as she roller coasted from one to the next. A fork of lightning exploded into a wave. A crash of thunder hit her ears like a boxer's punch. Alex threw herself onto her stomach and clung to the tiller. The next wave was under her, and the wind was howling and hurtling her toward the smudge of Nim's Island. "Faster than a city train," Alex guessed. She couldn't decide whether that was a good thing or not, but she was beginning to understand how her hero felt when she sent him adventuring. Terrified, thrilled, sure he was going to die, and so alive that he never wanted to stop. Crack! The sails billowed like a balloon. The mast lifted and toppled off the boat. There was a sad flap of white, and her mast and sails sank out of sight. "So now it's a rowboat," Alex decided. She pretended that she was her hero because he wouldn't mind that his computer and suitcase had washed overboard and were at the bottom of the ocean. He wouldn't even be scared when he saw that the mast had taken a chunk out of the bottom of the boat as a going-away present, and the sea was coming in to take its place. A hero would simply take off his hat and bail, so that's what Alex did. The problem was that even when she was being a hero, the waves were still monstrous. The rain was still pouring, and the wind was still roaring. And each time they slammed across a wave, more of the wave came into the boat, and no matter how fast she bailed, less of it went out. The hole was getting bigger and bigger, and the bigger it got, the faster the water poured in. And the faster the water poured in, the bigger the hole got. And the bigger the hole got, the faster the boat sank. As if it were tired of being a boat and wanted to try being a submarine. And Alex was still tied firmly to it. "If only I'd been a brownie," she muttered frantically, trying to untie the pulled tightrope and learn to tie reef knots, or whatever kind of knots it is that you can untie when you need to. She tried to undo the knot around her waist first, but when she pulled it so tight that she could hardly breathe, she gave up and worked on the other end. She tried with fingers and tried with teeth, sputtering and choking because now the knot was quite a long way underwater. "Which is where I'm going to be too," Alex thought. And even though she didn't much like being in the top of the ocean, she thought she'd like being in the bottom even less. Chapter 14. Nim lay on the floor of the cave with Fred under one arm and Selkie sheltering her back. Through the opening, they could see the rain trickle to a stop and the gale gentle to a wind. They crept out to look. Peering over the black rocks, the sea was still monstrous. The wind had whipped it to a fury, and it wasn't ready to calm down just because the storm had passed. Towering waves crashed onto the shore. Spray foamed white, and rainbows fountained into the clearing sky. It could have been beautiful if Nim hadn't known that Jack was on the west side of the island, being tossed even farther from home, and Alex was on the east, being thrown toward it. "She'll be smashed on the rocks," Nim cried. She searched the horizon with her spyglass. There was no sign of a sail, but there was a speck that could be a boat with someone inside it. Nim was still scared, but there wasn't enough time to think. She crawled back into the cave and tore a sheet from her notebook. "Dear Jack, I've gone to rescue Alex Rover. Love, Nim." Selkie was waiting. Fred was starting to slide down toward the sea. "Wait," Nim shouted. "You can't swim out there by yourself." But Fred wasn't himself. Chica had heard Nim's whistle a storm while ago and had been resting on the seabed as close as she could get to her friends in the cave. Fred scrambled onto her back and hooked his claws into the edge of her shell, staring out over her head. Nim hugged hard around Selkie's neck, and they slid into the water. It was hard swimming, even for a brave and determined lion of the sea. The wave slammed against them so hard and so high that sometimes they threw Selkie backward and under the water, which is where the sea lions like to swim, but not now when they're carrying girls on their back. Nim's hair whipped like long wet ropes, and she gulped salt water with every breath, but she clung as tight as she ever could. The seventh wave came, a swamping, dumping wave, stronger than Selkie, forcing her down deep below the water, stronger than Nim, ripping her arms away from Selkie's neck and pushing her deeper still. So there was nothing but swirling blue, and she didn't know which way was up to the air and which way was down to the bottom. She was whirling, struggling, sinking. But Selkie somersaulted backward and pushed her up through the water till she was spluttering, coughing, breathing again. Then the waves weren't quite so wild. They could ride up them and slide down without going deep under the water. When they were in the valleys, they couldn't see anything but blue. But when they were on top, they could look around. They saw Chica and Fred, but never Alex. They went on looking, looking and looking, on and on. Now Selkie was too tired to leap across the waves and pretend it was fun. But when Nim tried to be helpful and swim, Selkie honked across, "No!" So Sim stayed on. She didn't know if she could have swum in those waves anyway. She started to worry about what she was going to do if she didn't find Alex. She started worrying about how big the waves were, where Jack was, and how far away they were taking him. She started to worry about Chica and Fred. She started to worry about how she would know when it was time to turn back. And that was the hardest thought of all, because it was the only one she could do something about. She was worrying so hard that she nearly fell off when Selkie barked again. Then Selkie didn't seem tired, and Nim didn't feel worried. She blew her whistle as hard as she could, and they charged across the waves into the small sinking boat. The water was up to Alex's waist, then her chest, and up to her neck. She was spluttering and ducking and still struggling with the knots under the water. She tried to think what a hero would do now, but all she could think was that a hero would have known how to untie the knot and that she was no help to her at all. She took a deep breath and wondered if it was the last air she'd taste. A whistle shrilled. And there was the strangest, most wonderful thing she had ever seen. A wild-haired girl blowing a shell and riding a sea lion across the waves. "Nit!" shouted Alex. And then her mouth was underwater too. Nim remembered the scene in Mountain Madness, where the hero was snagged by the rope around his waist as he climbed down a cliff. She grabbed her knife from its pouch, and as Selkie ducked under the water, Nim cut the rope. Alex bobbed straight into the surface. "Nim Russo, I presume?" The boat gurgled rudely and sank. They looked at each other and started to giggle, choking with laughter and seawater. And Selkie had to bark twice to remind them that treading water with one arm and holding onto a sea line with the other in the middle of the stormy sea is not a time to giggle. But when Alex heard Selkie's bark, she said. So you're not a Saint Bernard, but are you a savior? And they laughed a bit more. And then they turned back toward the island. It should have been easier now that they were going the same way as the wave. Except the waves were smashing onto the black rocks, and they didn't want to do that. So they decided to curve around the reef and come in on the gentle slopes of the shell beach. And Selkie couldn't carry them both. We could take turns swimming and riding, said Nim. But even going with the waves, Nim couldn't swim as fast as Selkie. So Selkie kept having to turn around, and Alex wasn't very good at riding, so she fell off every time Selkie turned around. I wish I'd gone swimming lessons instead of writing stories about fish, Alex muttered, and Nim started worrying again. She was getting tired too, and so the next time Selkie circled back and Alex fell off, they both hung onto Selkie with one arm and swam with the other. But the island didn't seem to be getting much closer. Suddenly, there was a tickle under Nim's arm and a sweet, spiny head with a grinning dragon face. Fred, she cried, and Alex, who had never seen anything quite as ugly and as wonderful as a marine iguana, said, I'm sorry I called you a poodle. Following Fred was something that looked like a big bag with something else behind it, and that something began to look like a smug green turtle. Chica had found one of the coconut rafts. She moved steadily toward them, pushing the rafts, disappearing as each wave rolled over her and popping up when it cleared. Nothing ever upset Chica. Selkie kept pushing and Alex and Nim toward the island. Chica kept coming closer, and finally they met. Alex slid across from Selkie and climbed onto this coconut raft. She lay down and kicked her legs, but kicking Chica in the head didn't seem a good way to thank her. So she crouched forward and paddled with her hands. It didn't make the raft go much faster, but Alex felt better doing something. Nim got back onto Selkie, and Fred climbed onto her shoulders. A few minutes later, they tumbled onto Shell Beach, below where the hut used to be.